United Nations chief says
with
an attempt to try to solve the problem as the war in Ukraine rages on. Secretary General Antonio Guterres met with Vladimir Putin in Moscow before he made his way to the Ukrainian capital city of Kyiv to meet with the nation's president. The UN chief said the Putin meeting resulted in concrete results that led to citizens in Mariupol being evacuated after having been previously trapped. The Senate will vote on a big Ukraine aid bill as soon as possible.
This package is large. It's very much needed, and I'm going to work with my colleagues to make sure we can move forward on this package.
So said Majority Leader Chuck Schumer following House passage of the roughly $40 billion bill. Schumer said the U.S. has a moral obligation to continue helping Ukraine. The bill is about $7 billion more than President Biden requested for ongoing security and humanitarian aid as Ukraine tries to hold off the ongoing Russian invasion. Baby formula shortages are forcing parents to get creative, with some even sharing a home recipe online. Michael Kastner has more.
Dr. Valerie Smith, a Texas-based pediatrician, says that can get dangerous.
The biggest issue is that formula is constructed as closely as possible to mimic breast milk, specifically around the electrolyte balance.
She says instead of going to the pantry, call your pediatrician. Doctors can help get formula as a medical supply.
You're listening to The Latest on NBC News Radio.
Need a break from the sound bites and the talking heads? Do you want information you can actually use? Information that'll change your life for the better? Then listen to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Del will show you how to retire in 2 to 5 years. Your age doesn't matter. Turn off the pundits and turn on the passive income. Tune in to the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
Tune in every Monday at 8 a.m., Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 5 p.m., and Thursdays at noon, right here on KKNW.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for Alternative Talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, we'll see partly sunny skies today. High temperatures around 59, 60 degrees. Tonight, unfortunately, those clouds and slight chance of rain showers will move back in. Low temperatures back down to about 45. For Thursday, more clouds and rain expected. High temperatures cooler around 53 with low temperatures around 41. Clouds and rain will continue for Friday and running up into the weekend. High temperatures in the upper 50s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned, because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show. It's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. And I want to give another shout out for those of you that know we're doing quite a few shows for the month of May. We do quite a few shows anyway on mental health awareness, but Mental Health Awareness Month started on May 1st, and I think every month should be Mental Health Awareness Month. And the reason that this is so important to all of us is because many of us come through and we come from families where we have a history of this. And on the Dr. Pat Show, which you're listening to, and on Transformation Talk Radio, you will hear all of our hosts and people that are so acutely aware. However, what we've just gone through for the past 3 years, and some people in my profession would say that there hasn't been something quite like this at a mental and emotional level that hit the family unit together so strongly. And they're comparing that to World War II. Well, what they're saying is that we have been so close together in isolation for 3 years pretty much that we're just starting to begin to understand the repercussions of all of that. And so today what I want to say to all of you is if you see a friend of yours drinking too much or you see a parent of yours recreational drugs too much, the first place is compassion. That's the first place. Because underneath that, a majority percent of the time, there is wounding. Some of it's deep, some of it not. But we seek to comfort ourselves. We seek to do it. And in isolation, the comfort became drugs, alcohol, food, and addiction to a whole lot of other things. Today's show, and it was just a conversation, I guess, that really got me thinking here before we came on with Dr. Gregory Little and his, how should I say it? We'll just call it his latest book. I don't even know if it's his latest book. But you all have heard me talk about and actually ask a question, because it's really a phenomenon that I'm seeing. And the phenomenon started, I guess you could say it started a number of decades ago with the introduction of comic books. I know, don't laugh. This really is a conversation about origins of the gods with Gregory Little, but Gregory L. Little. But think about this. What were we in need of so desperately on the onset of film, but especially in the world of ideas and imagination? What were we so hungry for? And what are we still so hungry for? If you take a look at where we are now and you ask yourself, how does it, almost, not quite post-pandemic, but how is it that the top grossing movies and the most anticipated films are not films of the heart? There's nobody flocking to go see Love Story right now. But what is it that we're hungry for? But here's the question that I'm going to talk with Gregory about, because he covers it in his book. Did the idea to create these characters come from us, or was there the idea and energy of this kind of phenomenon, imagination, gods, skinwalkers, oh my gosh, you just name it, earliest forms of shamanism. So think about it. Which came first, chicken or the egg? Dr. Gregory, great to have you here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Good introduction. By the way, I was a mental health counselor in my early years for 5 years on a prison mental health unit where we had convicted offenders that were all having mental health problems, the schizophrenics and bipolar, et cetera. Did that for 5 years and was a substance abuse counselor before that for some time before I got certified as a psychologist. So, this is a good time for people to reflect on that too. It's a tough time for people.
It's tough. Now I got a really interesting question for you, because I just had like an aha moment. My friend Gene Houston would say, oh my God, you like had a tipping point moment. How did two people like us, you with your background, me with mine, my childhood, my education, how do we get the honor and the privilege to talk about the origins of the gods? How did you get from that place, right, to be, you know, coming out front, internationally known for this topic, writing a phenomenal book, by the way? What was that journey like for you, and what obstacle, challenges did you personally have to overcome to get here right now, to even like for us to chat?
Okay, so first of all, let me, here's the book, co-authored with Britain's Andrew Collins.
Yeah.
So obstacles, none. I can't tell you that there's any obstacle at all, and that's kind of what I preach to people in my real career, the career that I'm actually getting income from, but I preach to people that it's really up to them, that they can kind of do. You can't do anything you want to do. You can't become anything you want to become. We all have limits. A guy that's 5 feet, 5 inches tall is not going to become a center in the NBA. It isn't going to happen. You can't do it. You just can't.
No.
That's 5'5 might be able to become like a point guard in the NBA, but I don't think that any 5'5s have ever done it. So we have limitations. that are caused by genetics and other things. But people can do pretty much what they want to do if they really have an interest in it. And so I really started in this. I've given this a lot of thought lately for a number of reasons, not just because I've talked about it on a few shows. But back in 1972, when I entered graduate school in psychology at what was then the University of Memphis, I had a major professor in psychology, had a PhD from Vanderbilt. His wife was a psychiatrist with an MD from Vanderbilt University. They took me under their wing. Actually, they started this process in 1970 when I very first met this professor. And I was being trained in the field of psychopharmacology. At that time, 1972, there were several kind of new age, people call it new age rages, whatever, but one of them was spoon bending and key bending. Uri Geller was kind of in the forefront with that. The idea of pyramid power was around then, that you could put objects in a pyramid that was built according to specific instructions, and it would do things like sharpen razor blades, or it would keep food fresh over a period of time. There were lots of claims made about it. Also that plants could have feelings. People were doing trance channeling. And that psychiatrist and psychologist took me to literally probably a couple hundred trance channeling sessions over the next 4 or 5 years. And they took me to lots of key bending and spoon bending parties. We did experiments in the laboratory on pyramids and pyramid power. We used the instructions. These were in the lab, the psychology labs, which it's very, very scientific. We also did experiments with plants. We were never able to bend spoons or keys with our mind. We saw people do it. We were not able to do it. We found that pyramid power was not exactly what it was supposed to be. We'd build the pyramids and then put the razor blades in them. Nah, they rusted and so on, just like you'd expect. We did find that plants did have feelings. That's a long, involved story that involved experiments. But that's kind of when I got into it. I had an interest in UFOs before then, but I really wasn't able to do a great deal with it until I got my doctorate. Then I shoved all the professional stuff. I still did it, but I shoved it to the side and wrote my first book, which was called The Archetype Experience, and it was a follow-up to Carl Jung's last book, which was published in 1959. It was called Flying Saucers, Things Seen in the Sky, Modern Myth of Things Seen in the Skies. So that's kind of how I started in it, but I've never had anybody in the field say, hey, you shouldn't do this. Psychologists have a very wide latitude in the things they can look at and investigate. And in the UFO field, you've got all this weird mental stuff going on. People like abductees are claiming bizarre experiences with glowing creatures. You have the contactee experience. And then we have this long history of things like angels and even ancient aliens. And so all of that stuff, Andrew and I actually kind of wrapped up into a package, an explanatory package, in the book Origins of the Gods. And that's really where it came from. Yeah. But again, no one's ever said, hey, you shouldn't be doing this. Nobody.
Well, but I have to ask the question, because I love that you shared that journey and timeline. And first of all, thank you for what you and Andrew put together in here. Number one, thank you. Thank you for insisting on images. Thank you. Number two is we as people, we are sometimes intuitively drawn to things. Let me just call it that. You know, why does somebody go to Arizona or Nevada and cannot help themselves but get there to glaze at the nighttime? Can't explain it to the wife. The kids don't want anything to do with it. There's no swimming there. But yet is drawn to it. And there are a couple things that, there's so many things I want to talk to you about, but your research, Andrew's research, what you put together, it makes so much sense. And yet here we are. Here's where we are. Up until what, 2 years ago when they released the Pentagon report? Let's just be clear. A little part of the Pentagon report, because they only gave us from this period of time, right? Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many people I grew up knowing that were institutionalized, mostly by their husbands and family members, because they claim to see things, believe in something. And we're now at a place in time where when I pick up your book, I look at it with an open heart and a fresh lens. And for so many people, Gregory, the ability to do what you've done and bring this information to light is very freeing for people that pretty much have had a sense of it. For example, in your book, you have these crystals, the earliest, and they're not cracked yet into geodes, right?
Right. Okay.
I have 8 of them in my house. Why? I had no idea till I read your book about it. Why do I have 8 of them in my house? Why have I cut some of them open? What do they show on the inside? That's so fascinating. But the question really is, for me, is as you were writing this book, clearly a message that you and Andrew and others wanted to bring forth. What is your end game? What was your vision in communicating such amazing information? I mean, everything from Jung to Kiel to Cheyenne. I mean, there's so much in here that most books have not touched upon. So I'm so curious about what you saw when you decided to write it.
Well, Andrew and I had the same ideas about all this, the whole UFO phenomenon, apparitional phenomenon, the paranormal. We've had the same idea since 1984, and that's partly why we became such good friends. But our vision for this, really, and I've never said this before, but it's to transform the narrative. There is a lot going on out there. That in the book there's an example that I give, and it's I paraphrased this, and it was done by a guy many years ago, but he said that the whole UFO field and the paranormal field is like a huge jigsaw puzzle, and the jigsaw puzzle stretches out for miles and miles, and what happens to people is they're trying to solve the puzzle. They get in one area, and they get so focused in that area that they don't see anything else. And they'll pull the piece up and say, I've discovered this. And that's partly what the whole idea is of people that insist that every single UFO is an alien. Everyone is an extraterrestrial being because they're so focused on it. And then when you start talking to them about some paranormal stuff, they'll say, oh, that's not really what I'm interested in. I'm only interested in the craft, the nuts and bolts craft and the UFOs. Then there's other people that are interested in only other aspects, such as skeptics. Skeptics believe everything is a hoax or a hallucination, or that people are under the influence of drugs and then hallucinated, or they're just making it up. Skeptics, that everything they see, it's like they have the one piece of the puzzle. And yes, there have been some hoaxes. They'll point to the couple of hoaxes that they can prove and say, this proves they're all hoaxes, but it doesn't. So people get bogged down in looking at just one thing. It's like the ancient aliens phenomenon, which we address in the book. Andrew, of course, is one of the featured people on Ancient Aliens on almost every episode. For example, we take the point of view that ancient aliens clearly were here. We don't use the show Ancient Aliens to demonstrate that. We use the greatest skeptic of all time, Carl Sagan. Carl Sagan in 1963 wrote a scientific article saying aliens certainly have been here. And in that article, he calculated that they probably have visited Earth 10,000 times. In the past 2 million years or so. And I mean, that's the greatest skeptic of all time. So clearly, ancient aliens were here. Somebody was here in the remote past. All that they did, we don't know. I don't think they did everything that the entertainment show, Ancient Aliens show, says. I don't think the founding fathers were in direct contact with aliens. They may have been in contact with the the crux of the force that we discuss in the book, I call them time beings, and in it, Andrew calls them end beings. But it's very complicated. There's a lot of pieces to this puzzle, everything from like the Navy Tic Tacs means something, all the way to everything else. You can go back to Emanuel Swedenborg in the 1700s, who interacted with aliens for 28 years. Emanuel Swedenborg, one of the most famous scientists of all time, actually, he was the first true contactee. Starting in 1743, he had his first contact visit, and these beings that look just like us came to him almost on a daily basis for 28 years, took him on rides into the rest of the solar system. He went to Jupiter. He says he went to Jupiter. He went to Saturn. And he saw beings like us on all the other planets. So how do you explain all that? That's really what we tried to do in the book. How do you explain somebody like Joan of Arc? Joan of Arc is an incredible story. I've read everything skeptics have said about it, but it's an incredible story. How do you explain Edgar Casey? Again, incredible story that skeptics like to point out some of the flaws in the story, and there are some flaws. But they conveniently ignore all the incredible information that he gave that was accurate. They simply ignore that. Yeah. So you can't say that it's all hoaxing and that it's all nonsense. It isn't. There are lots of cases where there really is something truly going on. And in the book, we tried to go through those, whether it's the Zaytun Egypt apparitions or whether it's the Missouri UFOs, the things in Yakima, or any other of the reports.
Yeah, I love that you do this and you really take us through this in the book. One of the things I want to do, Benny, is we have three copies of the book to give away. Can we go ahead and do that before the half point? 1-800-930-2819. 1-800-930-2819. I want to talk about this idea of ancient astronauts, just like the way you've been talking about it.
Okay.
But you're right. There's a lot of information out there. There are television shows. There are movies. There are pop culture, let's just call them fantasy movies that are made that are supposedly not based on reality. They're Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of them do their homework. They do their research. So there's a glimpse of something they've discovered or found. And so my question to you is, there are some people that believe that the documentation, for lack of a better word, the documentation of ancient astronauts goes further back than we can even imagine. But you have a philosophy, you have an idea about this. Tell us where you think modern ancient astronaut theory started.
Well, I think the actual ancient astronaut theory started with Emanuel Swedenborg. That's really the beginning of it. I mean, you can say that the biblical reports of angels or the Vedic stories, some stories out of ancient Babylonia, you can say they're ancient astronauts, but none of those people, it's like the angels in the biblical times didn't say, oh, by the way, we're from Saturn or we're from Venus or we're from Mars. They never did that. They were angels. They were messengers of God. They were beings of light. Actually, almost all the reports of beings associated with UFOs, they're encased or enshrouded in a ball of light, and they usually glow. They're sometimes translucent beings. So Emanuel Swedenborg really was probably the first true contactee and where the ancient astronaut theory started. Swedenborg's writings, which he wrote several books about his 28-year experiences, and in Swedenborg's writings, he said that the creatures, the beings like us who came from other planets, told him straight out that they'd been visiting here for a long, long time and that they had affected the affairs on Earth, and that is why they were here now. And that really is what the contactee experience and what the ancient astronaut theory is all about. So that's actually the very first report that I can pinpoint. Again, it's 1743 when Swedenborg first met those beings. So before that, yeah, there were lots of people who said that the universe probably had life in it. Lots of people said that the planets were probably inhabited, but none of them were saying, oh, by the way, they're coming here too, and they're interacting with us. That pretty much begins with Swedenborg. I just don't know of anybody before Swedenborg.
You know, I love that we're talking about this, because sometimes for me, I've always wondered, and especially, you know, growing up, there was always this conversation of randomness. So what do I mean by that is, oh, we saw something over there. Oh, somebody saw something over there. Oh, until Neshonnick Station, New Jersey, where Linda's mom lived, that I used to visit, Jersey farmland, not Newark, right? Big acres. People, minimum lot division was 5 acres. And, you know, there's a lot that you can learn and grow up with, and it does seem random. It does seem, well, there's one over here, one over there. But we don't even know what we don't know. We only know what we have had a glimpse of. I never could feel inside that this was a random strategy, that it was, oh, let's just go see what they're doing on Earth, kind of like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting because I had heard about crop circles. I had seen the pictures. And this had to be a good 40 years ago. And we woke up one morning, looked out in the backyard, all of us. There was a diagram. I can't describe it. They had grass and acreage. So imagine that. But a perfectly carved out circle, perfectly carved out, another inner circle, a little something that the grass wasn't cut in the middle, and something came off of it. Now, when you grow up in a family like this, you think somebody got up in the middle of the night and turned on the sit-down mower and did that. That was so shocking. And I'm telling you, Linda's dad had the septic people over, wasn't even by the septic, but that never left our consciousness. It never left our consciousness. And what was so interesting about it is it was almost near perfection. Her dad was an engineer. So, of course, he's got to measure it. And he's got to... And I just wonder how many other things like that have been happening that people are not talking about. Because what you represent is a body of work, professionals that have spent your life bringing things like the caves, you know, bringing things like, what, 450,000 years, you know, caves forward. But I just wonder how many other people are like Linda, myself, waking up in the middle of central Jersey, looking out the window, not hearing anything through the night, and have that experience.
Well, you brought up something interesting, and the first half of the book, which is what I wrote, has a heading, and the heading is All Things Are Connected. And it is a Native American, that's a Native American saying. Actually, that is written on some of the signs when you go into Native American mound sites. There's a picture of one of the signs in the book at a Native American site. But, okay, so the idea here of all things being connected, it means there really is no randomness to it. Another concept that's in there is synchronicity. Synchronicity means meaningful coincidence. It's a coin termed by Carl Jung. Jung had talked with Albert Einstein some, and that's where the idea of synchronicity came from. And it simply means a meaningful coincidence, something that is connected by the real meaning of the experience, such as somebody important to you dies last night, and then that night they come to you in a dream. That is a meaningful coincidence. Now, a lot of skeptics will have an explanation for it, of course, but that's irrelevant. Anyway, chances are all of us have these experiences where things that we just don't notice them. And it's because synchronicity is a condition of awareness, and it's an awareness of seeing an interconnected net. And in the book, I talk about it like it's a spider web. Think of the universe as a giant spider web, which is actually what modern physics kind of says, this string theory.
Yep.
So with a spider web, if you vibrate any little portion of a spider web, everything vibrates. Everything is affected by any vibration done anywhere in the spider web. So everything in the universe then is connected and interconnected, and there really is no randomness to it then. That's the truth. And even in physics, every act has a consequence, every consequence has a consequence, and on it goes. I think that genetics, let's get back to the ancient astronaut thing, genetics.
Yeah.
I mean, all things are connected. Where did we come from? What's the best evidence of it? To me, the best evidence that we probably are not seeing the truth about where we came from, the best evidence is genetics. The human genome is absolutely incredible, as is all animal life. It's all absolutely amazing. And when you understand all the symbiotic relationships that have to happen in our body, which probably a third of our body is made up of bacteria that has nothing to do with us. It's living on its own, but it serves a purpose for us, and without it, we would die instantly. We can't exist without all that bacteria in us. One of the things is mitochondria. They're in every cell in our body, and the mitochondria give us our energy, and they're actually the source of all the ancient DNA studies that have been done. Most people don't know that. It's not being done on human DNA. It's being done on bacterial DNA that we all carry in ourselves. Another story, but it's too much to get into. But the truth is, in this idea, the Native American idea, which I really, really like, I like it a great deal. Obviously, I spent a lot of time in the book discussing it. All things are connected. There is a web that exists. The second book that I wrote is called People of the Web, and that was the whole idea. This web that Native Americans have talked about, everything is spiritual. Everything comes from the same source. They believed in a singularity at the beginning of time that split itself into three parts. Maybe we'll get into that after the break. But anyway, it's an amazing thing to think of, but I don't believe in randomness. There probably isn't much that's random.
That's it never made sense to me, even though, okay, there's a gap, but there's just too much in our lives that's systemic and systematic. I want to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about, okay, this is a word. We're going to begin the conversation, ontology. Have you ever heard that word? I know you all have heard of cosmology, but have you heard of ontology? Do you know what that is? We're going to share that. But before we go, how do we get copies of the book? How do people buy the book?
It is available everywhere. You can get it in any Barnes & Noble store. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble online, Simon & Schuster online, and lots of other sellers. It's in all three formats, paper, audio, and ebooks in every format. Just Simon & Schuster is a good website to go to on it, they have every link that exists for it.
When we come back, we're going to talk more with Dr. Little about Origins of the Gods. That book is available. There's so much in the book. But I was fascinated by the beginning conversation of one of the chapters in the book and learning the difference between ontology and cosmology, but not really understanding it. However, when you read the book, such a fascinating amount of information to take in. But the question that Deepak Chopra likes to ask is the questions that he says we ask ourselves. Who are we? Where do we come from? And what is our purpose? Let's take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back.
Are Are you ready to experience full body system wellness? Tune in to the Empower Me Show with Pam Bright, a spiritual toolbox for your life. Embrace the fullness of who you are as a spiritual being, having a human experience. Pam Bright is a multidimensional healer, light language channel, energy intuitive, and spiritual transformation coach. Join her for a rich conversation about how to unlock all your spiritual gifts on Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you having difficulty feeling at home in your own home? Join Annette Rigolo and Dr. Pat in Enlightened Environments, Optimizing from the Outside In, as they present a deep dive into the various vibrations of the Earth, along with man-made energies that impact our lives. Using the Diamond Dowsing Method, we will utilize specific vibrations to elevate our own homes to support us and expand us with their energy. Join us every third Wednesday at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time to make your home, home.
It is time to get inspired to take action in your life. Tune in to Emotional Elevation with me, Susan Denae. We are identifying, understanding, and treating our crazy one episode at a time. We all have crazy in our lives. The thing that sets us apart is how we deal with it. And I've got you covered. Enjoy your journey. You are worth it. Visit SusanDenae.com. That's D-E-N-E-E.com.
Illuminate your inner framework now with Shelley Hofberg and Stephanie Salt on the show Intuitive Diagnostics on Psychic Horizons. For you to find the keys to your highest path, it is vital that you see what is happening within your inner metric of you and those around you. They'll help you utilize soul architecture so that you can unravel the highest plan of life actualization for you. Manifest your unique life mission now, every Thursday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready to get big and live your life out loud? Tune in to Get Big Out Loud Radio, exploring life through the lens of curiosity and compassion. With me, Carrie Knudsen, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will offer ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. If you want to get big and live your life out loud, visit me at KnudsenSpeaks.com.
Are you wondering who you are meant to be in this ever-changing world right now? Kelly Kay is a certified New Paradigm Multidimensional Transformation Energy Healer, ready to assist you in this transformative process of expanding your consciousness. She helps you transmute your wounds and traumas into healing, growth, and wisdom, resulting in self-empowerment and freedom from fear. Visit enlightenedmedicine.com to learn more.
Welcome back, everyone. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. I have to say, you know, with Greg, there's so much in this book. I can't even begin to tell you all. Those of you that have actually been gifted a copy of the book, you'll get to experience this yourself. But it's one of these books, when you read it through the first time, as I did, you read it through and then you're drawn to certain parts of it. Who knows why? I don't know why. You know, what I'm drawn to today may be different than what I'm drawn to tomorrow. But there were a couple of things that I really held on to that opens up a bigger perspective, a bigger opportunity to shift, a bigger opportunity to explore that is which it goes beyond what we think we know. And, you know, Greg, one of the words I started out with, and I just hung on to it because it's a word, but it's not. It's so much more. It's when you started the chapter to talk about ontology. And you had one line that explained what it was and how it was different than cosmology. And I'll tell you, I didn't know that meaning. And so for me, I hung on to that, and it raised so many more questions. But isn't this really the direction where your heart is, this study, this passion to really explore this? is a journey in research of knowing. But it's not boxed in.
Yeah.
It's not boxed in to a pre-designed, predetermined, like that circle that was in that, you know, it's not boxed in. But yet, all of us waking up wanted to discount the circle that a neighbor came over in the middle of the night and perfectly carved that out without anybody knowing. So can we talk about this for a minute?
Well, yeah, ontology. Now, first of all, Andrew wrote that section on ontology. That's out of his section. Ontology is kind of the study of the nature of what we are in almost, not mystical sense, but a deeper sense, as deep as you can go, actually. And for me, I have pretty much accepted the Native American mound builder and the Zuni, some of the Navajo, but it's mainly the Algonquin beliefs about the nature of everything and where we came from and what it's all about. In fact, in the chapters on that, I've used the same questions. Who are we? Where did we come from? Why are we here? Where are we going? What are we supposed to do? That is what I tried to answer there, based upon the Native American beliefs. And to understand all that, you have to really go back to the point of creation with them. And creation's where it all started. So in their belief system, everything started with the singularity. And that word is the actual word that that an ethnographer got from one of the most important shaman of the Cheyenne tribe. And I've told some of that story in the book, and I've told it in previous books. But they believed there was a singularity to start. That's the real thing. And it was pure spirit. It had consciousness and intelligence. It had purpose. But the meaning of that singularity, it's understanding it's impossible. It had some sort of primordial intelligence that goes beyond anything we can understand. And for its own purpose, for some reason, in their belief system and explanatory system, that singularity divided itself into two portions, almost like a yin and yang symbol, where you have a perfect circle, but it's subdivided by two other elements that begin to rotate. And, of course, you can't have a singularity that's divided into two parts. It's no longer a singularity. It's a contradiction in terms. So the moment that these two forces or parts came into being, it split the singularity. And when it split, it created a three-part universe. There's an upper world, a lower world, and a physical world, the universe itself. The upper world is, they're all spiritual. Everything is made out of this primordial spiritual energy. So the upper world in this belief system is the force of creation. It is the force. People look at it like it's good, that it's all good. The good and bad is not really the issue here. The lower world, is dominated by this force of disorder, or in physics you would call it entropy. Entropy means that everything from the moment of its creation on begins a process of falling apart and going back to whatever its most primordial substance or form was. Everything is subject to entropy, whether it's our bodies, whether it's relationships, businesses, anything. So you have these two forces, creation or order at the top. You have entropy or disorder at the bottom. And then you have the physical world. According to this belief system, and this kind of sets up the summary of our entire theory, according to this belief system, the physical world, and let's just talk about Earth for a minute, because that's where we are. This world is a three-dimensional mirror, a physical three-dimensional mirror. And on one side of this three-dimensional mirror is reflected this force of creation or order. On the other side of this mirror is reflected the force of disorder and entropy. Remember, these are two spiritual forces. They're interacting and being reflected on this surface. Into this world came we three-dimensional beings. We were placed here. Now, if you actually read Native American stories about the beginning or how humans got here, you'll hear a lot of children's stories. And there's a real distinction you have to make here. Children's stories were told for moral purposes, to teach right and wrong, and actually just to have very interesting discussions with kids and with the general populace. There's also a whole cluster of beliefs in mythology called sacred stories. And the sacred stories were generally withheld from most of the ethnographers, the early ones. They were withheld from archaeologists that did the early studies on the Native American tribes, but we know a lot of them now. So the sacred stories tell what they believe is the real truth. So in the sacred stories, humans were placed here deliberately for two reasons. One is we are able to understand these two forces, the force of creation and the force of entropy, and the interaction of those two. And the second thing is we are here to maintain a balance between those two forces. We interact with them. They manifest to us in different ways. They are real energy forces that come to us in many different forms. They adapt culturally to us based on your culture and your expectations, your unconscious beliefs, and your whole idea system. They interact with us. But that's the idea. And so I like that idea. I like the way that they explained it. I've tried to explain it as simply as possible, and this is a thumbnail of it. But in this idea, all things are connected. All things are spiritual in nature, and it's an interaction. There are forces that appear to us first. This is really an important concept in the book, and it's the concept of the trickster. Native Americans have loads and loads of stories of tricksters. The idea of the trickster was introduced to me by Carl Jung, his writings on tricksters. He was fascinated with the concept. Yep. Psychologically, the trickster is supposedly there because we need something to blame for our own stupidity, for our own mistakes, for our own blunders as we move through this life. It's the trickster. We blame it. But there actually is an element to this that does manifest, the trickster element. Shamanism is all about interacting with trickster forces because that is what you encounter first.
Yeah.
Also the same thing that people encounter when they microdose with hallucinogens. I've had a lot of discussions with this. I don't recommend people do that. I am not in favor of people doing drugs, but I can't help but talk to loads of people that are doing this because there are others in this field that are pretty much recommending that everybody do it.
But isn't this also part, can I just go back to your book beautifully covers shamanism. It's just, I mean, I don't even know how this book was written because you have created such a beautiful web of things, as you said earlier at the top of the show, things that we become a little myopic about in their individual state. But here, this journey you take us on, the story you take us on, you know, it captures the essence of early on indigenous people not from here, people from here, experiences. But the way you've laid this out is beautiful. I want to get back to this for a minute because the honor of working with indigenous people is nothing that this woman from the Bronx ever, ever, ever thought that I would be gifted. And I learned more in a very short period of time. But the misconceptions are vast. Now, anyone that I know that has ever gone to, let me just say, I found out my grandfather was born in Brazil, so a lot of what I'm about to say to you makes more sense than on paper. Ayahuasca ceremonies that have been practiced by shamans, by others, that's not the conversation about the way some of the other hallucinogens. These are people that have rich cultures, and these rituals are profoundly insightful, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet find it so distressing that in our modern world, if it's not digitized, it's hard to imagine conceptualization. And we haven't even talked about, you know, the theory of electromagnetic energy and electromagnetic and paranormal. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, sitting here, I'm here as the owner of a network that's going to expand because I was driving across I-90 in Washington, and my windshield lit up and showed it to me. Now, I didn't tell anybody that for a long time, but what role do these shamans play, these rituals, these spiritual people that go far back than I can even think about? What role has that played in shaping us as humanity, and is it a lost, are we losing it?
Well, yeah, we are losing it, absolutely. It's disappearing very, very quickly in a lot of different ways. I know that this movement of people trying to do hallucinogens has something to do with that, and
yep.
It's like a quick way. A lot of people see it as a quick way for enlightenment, and I don't know that that's really what happens most of the time when you do it, particularly without the background. There's a big background. Before you start engaging in these rituals and wanting to know the secrets of the universe, it's a good idea to get yourself balanced and get your feet on the ground and make sure that you can come back to reality, because no matter how spiritual you get, yeah. You're still going to chop wood and carry water, which is
yeah.
a you know, famous quote out of a book. Before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water, because real life goes on. And that's something a lot of people forget.
Yeah.
But this age now, people are living inside. We are not connecting with nature much. We're not connecting with the real spiritual world. In the book, we talk about the importance that nature and electromagnetic free zones where the only electromagnetic energy that's there is the Earth's natural ambient frequency known as the Schumann resonance. That is what you want to get in order to connect with these things in a good way. If you're in what I like to call an electromagnetic cesspool, which I'm in right now, I'm in an electromagnetic cesspool.
Yes, sir.
There's electric wires all through here. There's all kinds of
and the Wi-Fi.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I can't really attune myself to the Earth's frequency. I'm not grounded. Some of the rituals we talk about in the book require that you're literally grounded in dirt in order to perform some of the rituals, and that's something that people aren't really going to do today. So we've gotten out of touch with this. We're getting more out of touch with it all the time. To some extent, our goal in this book was to kind of get people to understand this. There's always a counterculture at work. There are people that are trying to connect and get back to nature or whatever here. But we're trying to connect with them and explain to people how important it is that they maintain some sort of harmony with those two big forces I
yeah.
talked about, the force of creation and the force of entropy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people can manifest that in their own lives. If you can deal with those two forces, you can pretty much deal with whatever is going on in your life.
Yeah.
That's a good self-help concept, too.
I know we have a few minutes left, but that is, so honestly, that's a powerful message. I'm so glad you took a few minutes to share that. I'm also glad that both you and I are saying the same thing, and I want to be very clear to all of you out there. The rituals we are talking about, the things that are in this book, they have been practiced for thousands of years by people. They do these things based on experiences, but also they do not do these things alone. The closest to alone you may get is when you have to step out on your own for your vision quest. And that doesn't come until after many, many, many other rites of passage. Greg, I want to thank you for today. The book is available everywhere. I want to spend the next couple of minutes we have left in having you share your message, perhaps about something I didn't ask you.
Well, my whole life is about trying to get people to become better, to become the best version of themselves they can be. I'm best known in the field of treatment, trauma, substance abuse, parenting. I mean, I've been involved in criminal psychology and criminal treatment and the treatment of families for decades, since the 1970s, and that's my real area. And the truth is, even this stuff, the Indian mounds that I've written about, the paranormal, all of it serves the same purpose. All of it does. And it's to encourage people to be the best version of themselves they can be and to be kind. If you disagree with something, if you disagree with something somebody says, you can agree to disagree. You can debate it. You can talk about it. But these are such divisive times, and people are really, really in a bad way right now. Do less digital stuff. Get off your cell phone some. Go out into nature. I'm a big fan of people going and visiting archaeological sites in the United States. There are loads of them. The most incredible earthworks in the world are in Newark, Ohio. Yeah. Newark, Ohio, folks. There's loads of others that are around, but, oh, my God, the stuff here is unreal. Go and visit it, reconnect with nature, try to reconnect with some of those ancient cultures, and it helps get you in balance. It helps get your life in balance. It's a good thing to do with kids. I'm working on a project now for parents to take their children out, and parents don't need to be an expert in Native American stuff or history. All you got to do is ask kids a few questions when you go to some of these sites, like, what do you think they did here? Why do you think they built this? Why do you think they had more than one mound? Whatever. But it's become the best version of yourself. Be kind. There's no cost to kindness. All this anger today, and I've seen it forever. It's always been around. But it's a little worse today for obvious reasons.
It's accelerated because, you know, there is so much power in the electromagnetic field and digital for so many good uses. Healing. We know about frequency healing. We know how frequency can, you know, just annihilate, you know, bacteria or viral things in the body. But what you're talking about is on the heels of a headline I read this morning, you know, digital distribution of hate and lies. Mm. That has never worked out except in places like Nazi Germany, for example. But we're in a new world, and we have to learn how to remember the things you share today. Mm-hmm. When was the last time all of you, not you, Greg, because I know you've done it, but please think about this. When was the last time you just took your shoes and socks off and walked out in your backyard, whether it's grass or sand? When was the last time you did that, right? Even if you don't walk, and you just go out and stand there, when was the last time that you connected with that electromagnetic field of the earth? Greg, thank you so much. Again, how do we find out about you? How do we get the book?
If you want to find out about me, Google my whole name, Gregory L. Little. Put that initial in. Otherwise, you'll find football players. Greg Little's a football player. Obviously, football players are the most important because those always pop up first. But
they do.
You can Google me. All the information's there. You can find Twitter, Facebook, connections there, and lots of other stuff. But that's the way. And the book's available everywhere. You can Google Andrew's name, Andrew Collins, and you'll find it, or Origins of the God. And it's been a pleasure. I appreciate it. Someday let's talk about substance abuse treatment and criminals and all that stuff.
I hope you will come back.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday to you, Benny Mathers. Here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the sound. Over on 167 northbound near the off-ramp to the 405. There in those S-curves around Mount Bluff 26. A recent collision partially blocking the right hand of the lane. Also on I-5 southbound just south of Anderson Road. Still another collision earlier. Still blocking the left hand of the lane. Good to know it's a response team. So State Patrol have all been on the scene to take care of those motorists. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's Recovery Recharged Radio with your host, Ellen Stewart.
NBC
ABC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. The Senate takes a key procedural vote this afternoon to lock in federal protections for abortion rights. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia said he will not vote for the bill.
Make no mistake, it is not Roe v. Wade codification. It's an expansion.
It's expected to fall short of the 60 votes needed to move forward. Majority Leader Chuck Schumer called reproductive health care rights a bedrock freedom for American women for nearly half a century. The recent leak of a draft Supreme Court opinion signaled an end to abortion rights. A new Monmouth University poll shows the public opinion of the U.S. Supreme Court has dropped. Lisa G. reports.
The poll comes after the leaked draft decision on abortion. According to the poll, 52% of Americans disapprove of the job the court is doing, while 2 months ago the court had a disapproval rating of 42%. Republicans think more highly of the court than Democrats, and most Americans are concerned that overturning Roe v. Wade would create a confusing patchwork of laws across the country.
Inflation is still climbing at levels not seen in decades as the consumer price index rose 0.3% last month. It's up 8.3% year over year. The Florida Republican Governor Ron DeSantis says his administration is doing it the right way.
We actually guard people's money well. We don't print money that we don't have. We spend reasonably. And the result is we have the biggest budget surplus we've ever had in the history of the state right now.
President Biden says rising inflation is his top economic focus. The U.S. Defense Secretary says the coming weeks will be critical for Ukraine.
Our most urgent goal continues to be sending the Ukrainians the capabilities they need most right now as the war has shifted to the Donbas and to the south.
Lloyd Austin testified in a House budget hearing and said the U.S. and allies have provided aid to Ukraine with unprecedented speed and resolve. He stressed that much more will be needed to help Ukraine survive Russia's ongoing invasion. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Dell Technologies wants to celebrate all your hard work with these Small Business Month specials. Get great value offers on powerful laptops, desktops, and servers with Windows 11 Pro starting at $499, plus top monitors and docks, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. It's the perfect time to upgrade so you and your team can stay secure from anywhere. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL to refresh your business tech with these Small Business Month specials. Dell recommends Windows 11 Pro for business.
And let's go ahead and take a look now to alternative talk weather. I look for Wednesday. Well, we'll see probably sunny skies today. High temperatures from 59, 60 degrees. Tonight, unfortunately, those clouds and slight chance of rain showers will move back in. Low temperatures back down to about 45. For Thursday, more clouds and rain expected. High temperatures cooler around 53 with low temperatures around 41. Clouds and rain will continue for Friday and running up into the weekend. High temperatures in the upper 50s.
Want to promote your business uniquely and effectively? KKNW is the answer. Let us help you produce a professionally sounding radio show or podcast. Learn more at 1150kknw.com. KKNW, talk variety that's live and local. The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Welcome to my show, Recovery Recharged. I am usually here accompanied by my illustrious co-host, Dr. Pat, but today I am flying solo. And I am pleased to present a very special guest, and we're going to talk about a topic that is really pertinent to so many people today. You hear it on the news all the time. We are reading about it everywhere. And it is really, really important to people that are in recovery and also going through changes in terms of mental health and trauma. Today's program is going to be trauma and addiction, and I have a very special guest to talk about it with us, a professional in the field. So some of the things that we're going to talk about today is whether or not there's a real connection between trauma and addiction, and what are the causes of psychological trauma, and why is substance abuse a common coping mechanism for psychological trauma. And also, this guest is going to give us an idea of what hopeful treatments there are on the horizon. So those of you out there that may be suffering with this or may have a loved one who is suffering, I want you to pay close attention to some hopeful transformations today. My guest today is Lindsay Hutchinson. Lindsay has been in counseling and addiction for over 16 years. She's a licensed professional counselor and a licensed certified addiction drug counselor who is now currently the clinical director of Footprints to Recovery, which is an outpatient addictions treatment center in Hamilton, New Jersey. Lindsay also is in private practice, and she is particularly concerned and specializes in trauma, attachment, and addiction. She's certified in EMDR. She's a TheraPlay-trained therapist, and one of the modalities that she specializes in is nurtured heart approach. And we're going to ask her a little bit about that as well. But one of the things that I really like about Lindsay is the fact that she believes in unconditional positive regard. And that's something that we here at Transformation Talk Radio know a lot about. She has an unrelenting belief in finding positive strength in all her clients and her patients, and that's why I brought her to our radio station today. So, Recovery Recharge listeners, Transformation Talk Radio listeners, please welcome clinician Lindsay Hutchinson. Lindsay, it's great to see you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I want to begin by talking to you about a very basic definition for us. What do we actually mean by trauma? Can you define it for us in layman's terms? Because everybody has different definitions.
Sure. Well, I think that when people hear the word trauma, being a trauma clinician, we talk about big T and little T trauma. So when I think most people hear the word trauma, they think of big T, which is the, you know, severe traumas that we hear about, you know, abuse, neglect, PTSD for war veterans, people that have been, you know, subjected to severely violent crimes. You know, I think that we kind of, our mind goes to that, but I also think that's a part of the problem. I think we kind of minimize other traumas that are still very significant, but they might not be in that category specifically.
So what would be the little T then? If those are the big T things, what are the little T things?
Sure. Little T's can be, I can start with, you know, if you work your way up from the childhood up through adolescence and adulthood, you know, for children, there's a lot of absent parenting going on now. I think that we have a lot of children that don't feel seen. They're pretty invisible in the home. You know, that can be due to various reasons, you know, stressors in the house, work, you know, both if there are two parents in the home, it's very common that both parents are working full time. You know, that idea of, I remember when I was a kid, my father would call it a latchkey baby. You know, the children that would come home to an empty house regularly, at sometimes even days at a time when they're older, and not really having that, you know, support system that every child really needs to kind of develop a healthy attachment. So, you know, just feeling invisible in the home and feeling like even when you do good things, it doesn't really matter, and having that repeat over and over in your life.
I see. Okay. Well, I want to clarify a few things, and I want to redefine these things as you mentioned them. So let's go quickly through a little bit of list, because maybe then some of our listeners can identify with some things, okay? So it would be a great idea just to give us an idea of a little bit about what you see in terms of the kind of trauma that happens when you're treating somebody with sexual harassment. So give us some quick examples of that. What should somebody be looking for?
So for if they experience sexual harassment themselves, so it's very common in the workplace. I've known people that, you know, were told that they wouldn't be able to move up in a position unless they, you know, fulfilled some kind of requirement sexually for You know, and even not as severe as that, even someone's walking in the workplace and feeling, you know, objectified, someone constantly commenting on how they look, and that person feeling very uncomfortable, feeling on guard, elevated heart rate, the minute, you know, severe anxiety, thinking about work, you know, and feeling really scared maybe at times for who they're going to be around if that person is there. I've had many clients that have endured that, and it's extremely overwhelming. And again, that can really create some pretty severe responses and even similar to PTSD if someone stays in a workplace like that.
And that's not necessarily restricted to females, correct?
Correct.
Sexual harassment happened to men as well.
Yes, definitely.
And what about badgering? You mentioned badgering in your list here. Tell us about that.
Sure. So I think just, again, feeling that there's just those boundaries constantly just being badgered means just kind of being overwhelmed, tormented, and people coming at them constantly, feeling like, you know, if they don't do something in exchange, that they could be exploited for that. And again, just kind of feeling like their role, whether it's in the workplace and or in the family, is constantly kind of being jeopardized. But yeah, I think that that could be, again, have some severe consequences as well, for symptoms.
And also, you know, we've seen some very popular stuff going on, and even very recently on the air, Julia Roberts is playing Martha Mitchell on an HBO special called, or a Showtime special, I remember which one, called Gaslit, right?
Mm.
So talk a little bit about gaslighting and how traumatizing that could be.
Gaslighting. So, I mean, I think that if you, for anyone listening, can just go on and Google and search the word gaslight and how, what it means to be dealing with being in a dealing relationship. I think most people are, you know, kind of checking the list, like, that's me, this happened. It's actually extremely common, and I think the most difficult part about being in a relationship, whether it's gaslighting, is that you feel crazy. That person will pretty much tell you, you know, you shouldn't be feeling the way you feel, and really minimize your feelings. And the whole time, again, there's a purpose. It's very manipulative. It's extremely manipulative and a very common kind of way to get your way in a relationship for some people.
Yes, and based on, you know, the term comes from that black and white picture, gaslight, and obviously has been, you know, a way of being tormented, right?
Yeah.
And a way of sometimes someone who is in active addiction trying to tell the person, the loved one who doesn't understand what's going on, that there's nothing really wrong, right? Do you find that?
Yes, very much, very much. And kind of just this eagerness to kind of push it away. Let's not even talk about this. You're crazy. Everything's fine.
I don't have a drinking problem. I don't have a drug problem. You could see all the bottles in the world always. You know, it doesn't matter. I'm not drinking as much. I mean, I see that all day long, right?
And then it's really tricky if you're a child of an addict, and then that person knows that and uses it against you. You're overreacting. That's because your mom was an addict. That's not me. You know, you're too sensitive, and I think you need to go to therapy for that.
This is the number one thing that I see all the time, okay? And I know that it's very prevalent with you, and I'm very, very glad that people are being aware of it. And what I want to say to our listeners out there is if you are one of those people whose husband or wife or partner or son or daughter or whatever is filling you with these lies and telling you it's not a problem and you're exaggerating and you don't know what you're talking about, I need you to know that you're not alone and that you are right in your assumptions. If you think there is a problem, right? Wouldn't you agree, Lindsay? If you think there is a problem, there definitely is. And you should not let anybody tell you differently. Is that the advice you would give?
Exactly. And how you feel is how you feel, right? And this isn't, when you're in a relationship, there's compromise, there's understanding, there needs to be communication. So, you know, if I'm feeling scared because I never know if you're going to come home because I'm afraid you're going to, you know, crash your car because you're drinking and, you know, drinking after work, whatever it is, if I'm petrified of that phone call and I'm feeling that anxious constantly, that's a very real emotion and that needs to be addressed, you know, and as a partner, you know, as a couple. You know, you're entitled to your feelings, and that's a very real thing. Somebody can't tell you how to feel and how not to feel.
Exactly right. And somebody can tell you that you're crazy because you're feeling that way. Right?
Exactly.
That's the kind of thing. Okay. And then of course, there are actual traumatizing events, right? Like cataclysmic events, like COVID, like hurricanes and floods and all of those things. Yes?
Yeah.
You see that manifested too. And I'm sure over the last 2 years, you've seen a lot of that happening as well.
Very much. And again, we minimize it. I think COVID has been minimized. I mean, it's unreal how we don't
explain,
really...
Explain. What do you mean? What are the explanations that could be minimizing a pandemic?
Sure. I think that it's been years. It's been going on. We all were hoping and praying that things would get better. We were expecting it to be, you know, what, 6 months, 8 months, a year. And it kind of kept snowballing, and no one's talking about it. Like, our children, it's just, you know, deal with it. Us, just deal with it, right? It's like, you make it happen, you still figure it out, you need to get to work, you need to make your money, you need to keep plowing through. And I think we haven't really helped our parents either. How do we talk about this with our kids, you know? I know I talk about my kids, but if I'm not really a talker, or if I'm not talking about my feelings, and, you know, for me, that's all I do, obviously, how do I talk about this? How do I talk about feelings and how scary? This has been a really, it's unreal. It's like a movie, you know?
Well,
and we don't
yeah,
really
because it happens once in 100 years. So how old are your kids?
5 and 7.
So give us an example, because there are so many parents out there. Give us an example of the kinds of things you said to your kids about the pandemic. What did you say?
Well, I explained to them that there were a lot of people getting sick, and that it is really scary, you know, and I asked them, you know, because they were scared. They were seeing kids, you know, coming back in, you know, being told just to wear a mask. To me, kids didn't wear a mask. They've never even seen anything like this. So, and I just know how stressful it was for us as adults, right? We were all very overwhelmed. I mean, these little people, it was just such a massive change in our lives. So I think just asking them how they're feeling, you know, talking to them, you know, is anything on their mind, you know, and just feeling them out. And then if they are saying, I'm scared, I'm not saying, you're fine. Don't worry about it. You're going to be okay. Tell me more, you know, and what can we do, you know? And of course, we can kind of be a little more validating, letting them feel how they feel, but also letting them know that we're going to do everything we can to keep them safe. And that's why these things were being done, was to keep them and other people safe. So I think explaining it, because I think for a long time, we weren't really even talking about it. We're kind of just like, you know, we don't want to talk about it.
Right, but it's important to know, especially from a trauma specialist.
Yeah,
you've gone right in there, and then you've talked to your children, and you haven't shoved it under the rug. You haven't
Correct.
Minimized their feelings,
right.
And you've encouraged them to talk about it, right?
Definitely.
Because
yeah.
What you're saying as a trauma specialist is that parents sometimes try to go in there and try to fix or try to protect.
We can't help
right? that. Make it all okay. I want to make it okay. I don't want them to see anything horrible. I don't want them to, you know, to know anything. I just want to come in there and be the fixer. And that's not always the case, because we don't know the depth of what they're thinking, and it's really important for them to express their feelings.
Definitely. Yeah, we actually have to listen. That's a big thing for parents and for clinicians, for anyone working with a therapist. Make sure you're feeling like someone's listening to you, not just answering everything and giving you answers to everything. We need to really listen. I think it's a big, very
right,
important.
Especially to young children.
Yes.
You know, 5 and 7 years old, they have something to say. They really
yes.
do.
They really do.
So, of course, there's so much. There's such a big list of trauma. I mean, you know, there's, you know, from the simple things like just being embarrassed in public or
yeah.
or having a job situation, whether it's a sexual harassment situation or being fired from the job or being
yeah.
hurt on the job or, you know, or PTSD that could happen in a military situation. I mean, I know there are a plethora of things that we can talk about. And then also, trauma in many ways can be very subjective, don't you think? What could be traumatizing to you may not be traumatizing to me. Is that possible?
Very much. And also, I think a really important thing to remember, so many people here, again, we have answers for everything, right? Well, I went through that, and I'm fine. Well, first of all, what do you best define as fine? Are you, Lou?
Yeah.
But if you are, most likely you had some pretty amazing, like a support, somebody, some person, it's been shown in research, you need one person in your life that believes in you and is there for you and hopefully feels safe for you. Most children and teens that grow up to adults, if they don't have that one person, and again, it doesn't have to be family. It can be a teacher. It can be a coach. It can be, and that's why those roles are so important for these children that have no one at home to be that support for them. But if you don't have that, that's where these traumas become, I mean, it's exponential how it impacts a child and a teen when they have no rock in their life to go back to, you know. My uncle always used the analogy of the tree when you're playing tag, like that safe place, and he always said, like, he's that tree. Not just one of my family members, but I had that, you know, I still do. And that's really important when we're in a place where we don't know, when we're brought to our knees by a huge event in our lives, whether it's death, loss, divorce, you name it, all these really brutal things that can happen in our lives, that we need that rock there, that kind of that tree, that safety to be there for us.
And the mistake is not realizing that we need it, right? So it's really
for
good,
sure,
that you've brought it to the attention of our listeners, because there are so many of them, understanding that no matter what, we cannot do this alone and we can't go through it alone. We can't keep all of those thoughts and feelings in our subconscious and in our mind without getting it out.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. And bouncing it off somebody who is either a professional, like a recovery coach like myself, or a clinician like yourself, or somebody that at least is going to listen with an open heart and open mind and a non-judgmental approach. Right?
Yeah.
Somebody that's stable, somebody that provides a foundation. So that's something that one should look at. And sometimes I think parents are confused by that, because like we said, parents always want to fix. Right?
Yeah.
I want it to be me, right? You want someone to come to mom or to dad. But I think what parents have to understand is no matter where your child gets that stability, it's very important that he has that.
Very. And the more people they have, right, it's incredible how resilient that child will become. You know, I think that's an example I would have in my own life, is that it takes a village. And whether it's immediate family, blood relatives, and then the family that I call family that aren't my blood relatives, and then my friends that have been like my, you know, sisters from day one. You know, those people, those are all people that help pick you up. We need each other. We need someone, but we really need to look at that, because I think there's many of us that walk through life that I got this. And really, that fear of connecting, that's where that trauma for me, that's rooted when it comes to addiction, you know, and all of this, I do feel like there's so many people that push people away because they're so afraid. They don't feel like they are worthy of that connection because they never had it from the start. How do I even trust anyone if I couldn't trust, you know, the people I see birth to me?
Well, you brought together two distinct issues that I find not only in recovery but in working with trauma patients, and that's number one, how does that person who has been traumatized begin to know how to trust, right? Because they've suffered a trauma. So trust is a really, really big thing. There's no question. And,
mm-hmm.
and also understanding that by opening up, one takes a risk in maybe not being believed or not thinking that they're entitled to get the help because they feel undeserving because of the trauma. So it's not only an outward trust, it's an inward distrust of their own self-esteem and their own self-worth. Yes?
Exactly. Yes. It's am I worth this? Do I genuinely deserve this? And then you go into the whole shame and the guilt and all of this, again, just really heavy emotion that comes to this. I mean, it becomes this core belief system. And that's kind of, when we talk about trauma therapy, that's what we really work on in healing, because these core beliefs have been created since we were young. And I think that, again, you know, it's not about what's happened to us. It's how it's made us feel about ourselves. That's my main thing I want anyone to know listening to this, is that it's not about just the event. It's what are these negative belief systems that have been created in my mind that now almost become like my mantra for my life, of all the negativity. It's truly like poison, you know, and it takes over our whole life. It affects every aspect of our lives if we don't really look at that and look at ways to heal from that.
And not only that, but it normally comes from the point of trauma. So if you were traumatized at five,
yeah,
and all of that behavior going forward is stemming from being five. You
yeah
know, if you were traumatized late in life, then, you know, then you have a different start. But it means that there could be decades and decades of this just piled on, you know,
yeah,
like uncovering this dark web.
It is. It can be really overwhelming for most clients, you know, of course. But that's my thing, is that's our job, right? So, you know, we call it like holding a space for our clients, and we will. That's what we have to do. And I always speak about leaning in, and that's one of my favorite things, that we lean into this. See, this is the work that needs to get done. It is so overwhelming, and it can be really scary, intimidating. But that's why you need to be with a professional that is certified and can do this work with you. Because for me, there's so many patterns of behavior that start way before the drink gets picked up or the drug gets picked up. You know, there's just so many. I mean, I always ask people, like, go back, you know, go back to the beginning. Where did these emotions start? You know, and it's way before they could pick up, you know, it's sometimes years before they picked up. So, you know, that's really what we need to look at. I mean, those emotions are all there. They didn't go anywhere.
Well, we're going to talk a great deal about what kinds of work you do, because I want to be able to leave people in the second half of this with some immediate steps. Okay,
yeah,
things to look for and things to do. And because you've been doing this for such a long time, you know that there are successful outcomes. And that's the most wonderful part about this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We know more. We've learned more. People do recover, right? They get better?
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, the last 10 years, it's incredible. And even in the last few years, it's amazing the different modalities, the different treatments that have come forward that are just truly, I mean, it changes not only my clients and our clients' lives, it changed my life. You know, you feel that you're
actually... How did it change your life?
Well, when you do the trainings, you actually have to have it done too as well. and it's really intense. I'm speaking of one specific training that I'll tell you guys about in a bit. But I think that, you know, it really makes you think, and it makes you look at so many of these negative beliefs that we all have, you know. If someone falls and trips on something, it's like, oh, I'm such an idiot. I'm such a klutz. And it's constantly, right? Like, I'm just stupid. I'm stupid. You know, of course I would do that. I'm dumb. And it just becomes this, you know, but that belief system happened way before that. But if you're saying this to yourself all day, right, all night, you're waking up thinking these things. The minute you have a negative, you know, interaction with someone, well, I'm just dumb, you know, I messed that up one up too. Oh, there we go. And they can make a lot of times I have clients that, and I'm sure people here, you know, make jokes of it. You know, I'm making a joke about myself. If I'm making a joke about myself constantly, making fun of myself, you know, always making joke out of everything too, right? The minute it gets too serious or heavy, I got to throw that joke in there. I don't want anyone, I'm not going to get emotional. You know, these are all defense, you know, mechanisms that we develop because we just are avoiding really what's, like I always say to my clients, what's under all of that? Like, we can stay surface level for our whole, right? But what's underneath all of that? There's so much there. So I think for me, it changed how I look at my own life, how I look at interacting with people in my world and in my life. And then for my clients, I mean, my life is the work I do. I do this more than I'm with my children, right? And with my family, with my loved ones. So it changed everything for me because I see the work that's done and the improvement and changes their lives. It's really mind-blowing.
That's great. And like, it's a calling for you. It's a calling for me too. We're just coming up on just about enough time to go to the commercial break, and we have so much more to cover. But in the interim, in the last 30 seconds, I need you to tell people where to find you. Tell us quickly the website to find you and how they can connect with you directly.
Sure. So I'm with Footprints to Recovery, and I'm in Hamilton, New Jersey. So if you just search Footprints, if that's easier, just you'll find us, Footprints to Recovery. We are all over the country. Our kind of umbrella company is Alia Health Group, AHG. But again, footprintstorecovery.com, you'll find us. We're there.
Okay. And as always, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, 1-800-889-1757. PushyBroadFromTheBronx.com. We have so much more to cover with trauma and addiction and my special guest, Lindsay Hutchison, who is the clinical director of Footprints to Recovery. When we come back, thank you very much. Stay with us.
Is open and we are doing strictly phone consultations. If you would like to call and get tuned up, it's perfect time with everything that's going on and things are calming down. Pick up the phone and give us a call. It's quick and easy and it's fun. If you'd like more information on that, you can look at MaryJaneMack.com or call our office at 888-777-4232.
Tune into the Dr. Diane Show, where we explore revolutionary expansion of mind, body, and soul every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I bring over 20 years of expertise as a mindset warrior, perspective shifter, and unshakable optimist dedicated to helping you reach your wildest dreams in business, health, performance, and relationships. Join the discussion on the show. Learn more about me, Dr. Diane, and receive a free digital copy of my magazine at naturalnutmeg.com.
There isn't a magic pill to creating your healthy lifestyle. Yet it doesn't have to be hard or feel impossible. Health works from the inside out, connecting both your body and your mind. Georgette LePage lives and breathes what she teaches, so allow her to be living proof of what can work for you. Connect with her now for a free 30-minute discovery session to see what results you are looking for and how she can help you get them. Visit GeorgetteLePage.com.
To awaken your magic within, reveal unconscious systems to discover your unstoppable freedom power. Join me, Tracy Lynn Wallace, on TransformationTalkRadio.com the first Tuesday of each month, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, to gain insight, direction, and tools to uncover limiting beliefs. Get ready to step into your unstoppable power to discover and uncover your magic within.
Hi, I'm Coach Martez.
And I'm licensed therapist with Dreamalation.
We want to invite you to join us on the Coach Martez and with Dreamalation show, where we discuss understanding love, accepting truth, and changing your perspective.
Relationships are the currency to life, and so many couples find themselves broke in their relationships. We want you to join us for a lively discussion and practical tips and insights on how to turn things around and gain the marital life mindset.
Welcome back, Transformation Talk Radio listeners. I am Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, and we are talking about something so near and dear to my heart with a clinical professional, Lindsay Hutchison. She and I are talking about trauma and addiction. And if you are out there feeling any kind of mental health breakdown, or you know somebody that is going through that, and it is coupled with addiction, please listen to what we are talking about today, because it's really, really, really going to help you. So, Lindsay, we were talking about how difficult it is and how one of the signs of trauma, and I want to know, not only does the trauma affect the individual, but who else does having a traumatized situation affect?
It definitely affects anyone in that person's world. I think that I've known, clients, families, partners, children that are kind of imprisoned by it, whether it's, a client's hypervigilant, severely reacted to certain things, can't maybe go to certain events and or, socialize. I know families that are kind of very afraid to even talk to their partner or their family or loved ones about this because they see that something's not right, so they don't even know how to address it. And it can become this terrible situation where family members are walking on eggshells constantly and just never know what the day is going to bring. The same thing if you're in, again, with addiction in your family. You just don't, every day you don't know what's going to happen. It's just a terrible way to exist, honestly. Very overwhelming.
What is the most prevalent things that I see, especially if there's an active addict or an alcoholic in the house and the partner is trying desperately to minimize the situation so that the children don't want, they don't want the children to be exposed?
Right.
But what we realize after doing this for such a long time is that no matter what, the children are automatically exposed. Everybody thinks it's a big secret. The children are suffering in silence because they don't want to talk about it, because mom and dad don't talk about it. But nevertheless, the children could be easily psychologically traumatized by this, right? Just from the silence of it all, correct?
Yes, and just kind of learning, right, being modeled for them that, you know, we're not going to talk about this. We're going to just keep plowing through, and it's going to be okay. When this isn't okay at all, I'm afraid to even come home, and no one's asking me if I'm okay. It's just, again, that's a massive root for trauma for many of my clients that, you know, many of them are children of alcoholics or addicts, and kind of what that does, you know, to a person and kind of the personality traits you have to develop to be able to survive that.
And what parents don't understand is they are not protecting their children at all. In fact, one would argue that they were doing the reverse.
Yes, unfortunately. And I think that, again, like we talked about before, there's never, you know, it's parents aren't being malicious. It's like this idea of fixing and everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. I got this, even though you don't, right? No one has that figured out. There really needs to be pretty significant changes that have to be made, and children cannot be exposed to it. And even for the families that aren't talking about it and they're keeping it hidden from the kids, all of those children, right, we work with those children now as adults, and they talk about it, right? They knew from the beginning. You know, I know examples of children who, you know, now are adults, but they have stories when they were five, 6 years old, that they would go up and sniff the drink and know if there was alcohol in it or not, and then be proud of their parents for not drinking if it was just juice. I mean, that is very real. That's a core memory, man. That's 5 years old. But when we talk about core memory, these are things that are being made and created that you're going to go back to, whether you're consciously aware of it or not. So, yeah, the damage is pretty severe if you can't create a stable environment in some way.
Or the opposite, okay? It's because addiction is predicated on so many things. Heredity is one of them. Environment is another one, okay?
Yep.
You know, the propensity to be an alcoholic or an addict if the family member is right there and if nobody's talking about it, or if mom or dad, who is the active addict or alcoholic, is minimizing it, it makes it okay for a kid at a young age to think it's okay to do this.
It's okay. And if I'm feeling guilty or shame, it just perpetuates that guilt and shame. And we can't talk about that either. And then, you know, once I start to hide my own drinks as a kid or a teen, and I'm, you know I shouldn't be doing this. And, it just perpetuates this guilt and shame and this, you know, code of silence, which is honestly probably one of the most dangerous parts about it, you know, completely. Because you're not talking. You know, no one's validated. No one is really able to get any kind of help or feel any kind of support or nurturing from their family.
Exactly, which means the silence is deafening because the silence just makes it condoning, behavior that's not acceptable. I know the Transformation Talk Radio listeners occasionally call into the show. Please feel free to do that if you want to ask a question for me or to our professional, Lindsay, today. If you have something that you want to talk about, or if you have something that you want to tell us or maybe get in touch with us about it or ask a question that may be private for you, you can always call me on my line, 800-889-1757, ask a private question, and I'll make sure Lindsay answers you directly. Or if you want to ask something on the air today while we're on for another 20 minutes or so, please feel free to do that. So moving on, because there's a lot to cover, so I want to very quickly have you talk to us about what the overt signs and symptoms of trauma can be. Tell us what one sees, what someone should look out for, so that if you're noticing that in your child or even in yourself, you will know how to get help.
Sure. So, I mean, I'll give some of the, I think, first ones that would come to mind, and for clients and or people that are listening, I think it's a big one, especially when it comes to medicating, right, so with drugs. So a lot of my clients, their sleep is absolutely horrible. They are having night terrors, not just nightmares, but, you know, so vivid. They could be waking up, kind of acting out things in their sleep, but really, really almost tormenting dreams. Sometimes they can remember it in the morning. Sometimes they have no idea what happened, but their partner or the family member that sees it is actually traumatized because it scares them so much of what's happening at night. So I have many clients who would medicate, you know, just to make themselves be able to fall asleep with no dreams, you know, with hope that they would be able just to be literally knocked out. So I think that's one. That's a big one. I think hypervigilance, kind of exaggerated startle response to sound.
Give us an example of that. Break that down.
Sure. So, you know, loud noises. I have had clients that even music, certain things, was very triggering. So a sound can actually, it's not just, oh, that's loud. It actually kind of creates an emotional kind of response. It can make them feel more guarded, unsafe, you know, really, really just overwhelmed. So they might need to get out of that environment immediately. I have clients that need to kind of sit in a corner with their back to the wall at all times. They need to be able to, right, look around wherever they are. They're like, I will never, you know, if someone comes up behind them, I have many clients, they say, don't come back up behind me and tap me on the shoulder. Like, you need to come to my face and walk in front of me. You can't come at me from the back because I will probably punch
right.
you, you know.
Right. Right.
They're in that mode of, again, they're just in this pretty severe kind of like hypervigilance is what we call it.
Well, as soon as I put the word out that callers can call us, Alicia has a question about the gaslighting comment I made earlier. Mm-hmm. If we can find out what that question is, we'd be happy to answer it.
Yes, hi. Are you taking my call?
Yes. Hi.
Yes.
Welcome to Recovery Recharge. How can we help you?
Very interesting conversation. And I wanted to ask for some clarity, perhaps. I'm trying to understand in a gaslighting situation, how does the one who's been or appears to feel like they're gaslit handle being gaslit? I'm not really sure because the perspective of the one being of the one feeling gaslit is that someone else did it and that it's not their fault. Some clarity around the gaslighting.
I understand.
Helpful.
So you want to know what one does about it to change the situation, correct?
Well, yeah. The person who's being gaslit.
Lindsay, why don't you answer this?
Sure. So, hi. So if you're feeling gaslit, I think clear boundaries and kind of, you know, stating facts, right? It's, you know, I think that when someone is gaslighting somebody, it's all about, you know, it's very manipulative. It's again, you're crazy, how you feel, you know. So using I statements, kind of, I'm feeling this way, this is what I'm seeing. I do recommend, you know, a therapist, a clinician can actually really help navigate that because it's really hard if you're having this interaction with someone who's gaslighting you. They're going to, unfortunately, they're going to continue it, right? This is kind of their role in that relationship. I've had people who kind of gave, you know, information. There's really great articles online and was like, hey, this is something you do all the time. You need to read this. And sometimes that person might show some insight, but I think most of the time you really need someone to kind of help you navigate that. Again, a family therapist, a licensed family therapist or a couples clinician that specializes right. would do a great job because they're able to be right there as the mediator and deal with it head on as it's happening as a neutral party because you're not neutral and neither is the other party, right? So I think sometimes that has to happen to get things really changed because most likely that person's been gaslighting in majority of their relationships since they were pretty young. And it's something that they've learned probably from their own family as well.
Yeah, that was my feeling. I haven't ever experienced anything like I did. It was pretty close, and it was in a work setting. So thankfully that helped me to just retain my composure. And I do work in healthcare, so I have some emergency emotional health training. But that was like, this is really
very overwhelming. It can make you hear these people snap, right? It makes you feel like you're going crazy.
My feelings were definitely torqued for sure. And I was very uncomfortable. I had to just exit the situation. There was nothing I could do because it just continued I appreciate this direction. It sounds like I would love to explore this more, so I'll go ahead and look at the information on the page about the two of you guys and see, because it's a very challenging situation, and I would love to be able to get a handle on it. I'm sure it's not going to be the first time I experience something like that.
Well, thank you, Alicia. If you go to pushybroadfromthebronx.com, I'm doing a free 20-minute consultation, and we can talk about anything you like. So if you set aside and you book a time to do that off the air, I can give you all the resources you need. Okay?
Yeah, okay. That sounds great. Yeah, thank you.
All right, pushybroadfromthebronx.com. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. So let's continue on. That's great. Let's go a little bit further. Let's talk about the direct connection between psychological trauma and substance misuse. I want to spend a little bit of time with that, and then I want to go straight into the specific effective treatment for trauma and addiction. Go ahead, Lindsay.
So I think, again, when we were talking about before, right, all these kind of big T's versus little T's, trauma in general. I do think that when it comes to using substances and addiction in general, I think that, again, it's medicating someone in some way, right? So it's helping me feel a certain way. So, for instance, I'll use a depressant, alcohol, as an example, right? I have such severe anxiety. I have had clients who had severe anxiety as a child, and even OCD tendencies, and they were kind of verbal about it, and their family kind of, again, really weren't willing to listen, minimize, and again, that kind of invisibility was really a huge problem for that client. And then it continued in sports, like nothing was ever good enough. So again, all these really negative core beliefs stuck with him. He was so anxious, he was socially anxious, he couldn't be around people. So once he started drinking, and his family knew, they didn't even really give him consequences. So then it was even more.
What did they know? They knew about his drinking or his trauma? Which one?
They knew about his drinking, and they knew he wasn't doing well mentally, kind of told them. He was a wreck, and we're talking age 13, 14. So once he started drinking, he thought he'd be in trouble. And his parents pretty much, they're like, oh, you're grounded. But then he wasn't grounded. You know what I mean? So he was like, okay, I can just keep doing this. For him, drinking was the first time he felt calm in his whole life. And then it developed into, well, where he was in treatment and his whole life. It's severe alcoholic since he was around 15, 16. And so you have two things going on. You have the mental health, but also, no matter what I say or do, no one's really listening to me that I need help. And really, when we did the work, that's where we were able to kind of piece all that together. Because for me, there was so much more than just anxiety, because there's many of us that have anxiety as children, you know what I mean, and as teens. There's more to that. How is he being made to feel about himself? And that was a direct link for, again, the drinking. He felt less anxious. He could sleep. He was able to be social. He would go to parties and talk to people. And he was just on, he thought he was, had it all figured out. And he, you know, thankfully didn't die. But it was so bad, you know, as an adult. And it's been his whole life. It was his only way to cope. It was really his only way to cope.
And that's exactly what happens, why there's such a link between trauma and substance misuse.
Yeah.
Because with all of the things we talked about, some of the signs like panic attacks and depression and fits of anxiety and low confidence and PTSD and all of those things, and not being able to express oneself, one has to find an outlet someplace else.
Yeah.
So when one discovers that outlet someplace else, or discovers that they can be more comfortable if they numb the pain and numb the trauma, the best way to do that is to use a mood-altering substance to excess. And that's what happens for all of us when we turn from not handling our mental situation and making it a physical situation. And that's exactly why treatment centers like Footprints to Recovery are so helpful in breaking that down.
Definitely.
I have learned also through working with treatment centers for the past 18 years that trauma and addiction always go hand in hand, right? They seem to walk hand in hand. But now you alluded to the fact, and we started in the beginning of time talking about the fact that new kinds of treatments and new ways of doing things really begin to break down and separate the trauma from the addiction so that one can work on it individually and simultaneously, correct?
Yes. I also think it's important to bring up, too, that there, again, this is really a huge, huge, it's vital in knowing this when it comes to addiction, but there are people that we would say the old school, right, that really get angry when trauma gets brought up, actually, because they feel that we're making an excuse for a client. You know,
explain
so
that a little more.
Sure. So there are schools of thought that feel that when we talk about trauma, that we're kind of not holding a client accountable for their addiction. And for me, that's not the case at all. For me, it's what is the root? We're not saying that we still need to do, right, 12-step, NAA, you name it, right, ACT, DBT, CBT, all these treatment modalities, they're all very important. You know, relapse prevention, yes, they're vital, right? But what, there's something missing. There's something missing. And that's where I think, again, when it comes to treatment, there's so many clients I know that they've been in and out of treatment centers for 10, 15 years. What is happening? We're not dealing with the root. So for me, it's we need to look at this piece. We can't just act like it's not there. And when we act like, oh, we're making excuses, you're actually part of the problem. You're dismissing a vital piece of addiction.
You're exactly right, which is why treatment centers in this country today are mostly dual diagnosis facilities, or at least begin to address what we call the secondary diagnosis, not only the diagnosis of the addiction, but the diagnosis of the mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, I know from working in treatment for such a long time that when somebody comes into treatment, counselors are not immediately looking at the mental health diagnosis until that person is detoxed, until that person has a semblance of sobriety, because there's no way of telling the real extent of the mental trauma until the mood-altering substance is no longer prevalent, is no longer the most prominent behavioral situation. Is that correct?
Definitely, yes. And even when they're out of detox and where they're with us for outpatient, that first month is still a really significant stabilization period. And for any clients that we have that do relapse or have any struggles with that, we would, you know, often put the trauma therapy on pause because it's not as effective. You know, we can't have any, you know, substances in that client's system whatsoever because it can actually affect the impact of the effectiveness of the treatment.
So now that we have all of these things and you've separated it out, I want you to spend about 2 minutes talking specifically about Footprints and the organization you work for, and talk about the kind of treatments that one uses at Footprints to be able to handle trauma and addiction.
Sure. So I work for an outpatient facility, so outpatient treatment. And this means that these clients already have completed detox or residential. So again, for anyone that needs that higher level care, they would complete that first before coming to us. So we have partial hospitalization, which basically just means you're with us Monday through Friday from 9 to 3. And then we have IOP, which is intensive outpatient, which is one level underneath that. And that kind of varies, but your day would be with us from 9 a.m. to noon. give or take.
So according to the layman, that means we are not on premise. We're not living as a patient. We go in as if to attend classes all day and then go back to our residence, our homes, correct?
Correct.
That's
correct.
What partial hospitalization and outpatient mean, that we come in from our house. We go to attend clinical classes all day long and treatment so that we can work on our issues, and then we come back. It's like a full day of therapy.
Yes, full day. Okay. And we also, for many of us, footprints in New Jersey as well as other facilities under our umbrella, we also are able to utilize structured sober living facilities, which is really important because many of our clients, their home environment is a big part of where the drug use is occurring and relapse is occurring. So those structured sober living and just sober living in general is really great because they have this environment that's safe for them, that other clients are in recovery, there's staff there that can assist and help with transportation, you name it. So that's also a really great part about our program.
And the umbrella organization is?
Aliyah.
And they have, and they have treatment centers all around the country.
All over the country, so, and with that said, once you drop down to IOP, which means you're with us from 9 a.m. to noon, that will vary how many days you come and see us, from 5 days a week and lower. But we also have evening IOP 3 nights a week. So for our clients that work full-time, they're able to come to us at night. We also offer that in telehealth. So, you know, we try to have that flexibility for our clients. I think that's a really important piece, and we want to make sure our clients' needs are being met, but we're also being flexible with what they need.
And now that we're still doing telehealth, it's a really good thing to know that people can take advantage all around the country.
Yeah.
Okay. So to wrap up in the last 2 minutes, I want you to give us a really good success story. Tell us how hopeful this treatment is and leave us with a message so that we know how to continue forward. What do you want to leave us with?
So I'll just tell a brief story of a client that had completed EMDR, which is a type of treatment therapy for trauma. As eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing, it's very long. So EMDR is much easier. And you can find client clinicians who specialize and are trained in EMDR. So I had a client who was going to be moving back home but wanted to experience EMDR one or two times before he left because he felt really safe with us and he was ready to do the work. So in that case, I said, okay, let's do this. So long story short, he had his first trauma and he would have flashbacks and such. It was his first experience with using and waking up in the hospital. He actually almost died. So he was only 16 years old. He had punched through a window and he had sliced his major artery. And he remembers waking up and his dad was really angry at him and wouldn't talk to him and was there. I mean, he'd been in the ICU. Dad was next to him in the bed. And he felt so horribly shamed and really just really angry at himself. And it kind of continued this cycle of drinking and using throughout his whole life. And when we started EMDR, he started bawling within, I would say, 45 seconds. And this was a man that, you know, was pretty much never really emotional, and he kind of prided himself on that. But he said, I never realized how scared I was. I was so scared. I was a 16-year-old kid who almost died, and I just needed my dad to, you can be mad at me, but I needed someone to hug me so bad, you know.
That's fantastic, and you're able to turn them around fantastically. I am so thrilled. Thank you, Lindsay, so much for being here. Footprints to Recovery, Lindsay Hutchinson is available at any time. Please go to the website, Footprints to Recovery, and also pushybroadfromthebronx.com, 800-889-1757. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Great.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Recovery Recharged with Certified Life and Recovery Coach Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Don't miss your next opportunity to let me help you recharge your recovery, let go of your secrets, and